This is Second Opinion, a podcast about how AI is reshaping how we think, decide, and relate to systems of intelligence. Today's deep dive builds on a recent blog post by Justin Hatton, published on Second Opinion's Substack. It's not a full summary, but a reflection that runs alongside it, exploring how subtle choices in framing AI systems can shift the way we trust and scrutinize them.
Right.
This isn't just theoretical. It affects how you interact with AI systems every day.
And that that exploration feels incredibly relevant right now, doesn't it? Especially as the term AI itself is starting to feel, well, stretched pretty thin.
Stretched thin is a good way to put it.
Yeah. As Houghton points out in the post, we use AI as this like huge umbrella term. It covers such an enormous and frankly diverse range of systems.
Oh, really?
I mean, think about it. We slap the same label on something like a chess engine, which, you know, does one very specific, very bounded thing.
Right. Plays chess. That's it.
And then we use the same term for these incredibly complex large language models that can generate poetry or code or whatever.
Or sophisticated medical diagnostic tools, recommendation engines, dictating what news you see.
Exactly. It's a lot under one banner.
It really is. It feels a bit like, I don't know, calling everything with wheels a vehicle. Sure, technically true, but a skateboard and a freight train are used differently.
That's a great analogy, because the experience, the purpose, how you interact with them, it's fundamentally different, isn't it?
Completely.
Yeah.
Yet, as the source highlights, so much of the public conversation, maybe even our own internal thinking sometimes, treats AI as this single thing.
This monolith.
Yeah, this monolith, this unified entity that's just marching steadily towards singularity or whatever the endpoint is supposed to be.
And, well, according to Houghton's perspective, that monolithic framing isn't just misleading. It's actually potentially quite dangerous.
Dangerous how?
Because AI is and can be so many distinct things. It operates in lots of different modes. And the really crucial part here isn't just the, you know, the technical nuts and bolts, the architecture, the model size, all that.
Yeah.
It's fundamentally about how it relates to us. How does the system interact with you, the user?
Right. Is it in the background? Is it talking to me? What's it doing?
Precisely. Is it working silently? Is it actively engaging? Is it giving you a definitive answer? Or is it more like offering a suggestion?
And these different relationships, the source argues, they really shape our expectations.
Profoundly.
Yeah.
They subtly influence how we behave around the AI, and maybe most importantly, they impact how much control we're willing to hand over.
Often without even noticing we're doing it.
Exactly. Without a conscious decision. It just happens.
So the point here isn't really to come up with yet another technical classification system, like another way to label different kinds of neural networks.
No, not at all. It's digging into something deeper, something more psychological, maybe social.
Yeah.
It's about the role we mentally assign to these AI systems, the job we think they're doing for us.
And how that mental model, that assigned role, then changes how we act around the AI.
Critically. Especially when the stakes climb higher. It's about understanding the relationship that's forming, maybe without us even realizing it.
That's fascinating. The idea that these aren't just technical tools, but they're also social artifacts.
And yes, that's a key concept Houghton emphasizes. They're designed by people, for people, their interface, their capabilities, even just how they're presented at all. It all communicates something about their intended role.
So how we frame it, what we call it, how it looks, how we talk to it, that's not neutral.
Not at all. It actively shapes our behavior when we use it. And that shaping, if it's not carefully considered for the context, well, that's where you get what the source calls misplaced trust.
Misplaced trust. I like that phrase. It really gets to the heart of it, doesn't it? The risk isn't just the AI being wrong, but us trusting it in the wrong way, or maybe too much for the situation.
Precisely. So the goal isn't just getting the technical label right. Oh, this is an LLM. That's a CNN. It's about understanding and clarifying the kind of relationship we're actually in with the system from a human point of view.
Okay, less about the AI's internal workings, more about the mental model we bring to the interaction.
Exactly. These cognitive frames we use when we interact with AI. And this, according to the source, is where you find both the huge opportunity and the really significant risk.
How so?
Well, as AI systems get more fluent, right? Especially the big models, they get better across more tasks. They sound more human. They're more versatile.
Yeah, they feel more capable.
And because of that, it becomes really easy for us to just slide between these different roles, these different mental models, without even noticing our whole stance towards the system has shifted.
Ah, the unnoticed slide. That feels key. Like you start using something for one thing, maybe cautiously.
Right, with clear boundaries.
And then because it does that well or just sounds confident, your brain kind of promotes it, reclassifies its role.
Exactly. And your behavior changes how much you check its work, how much you trust it. But you didn't consciously decide to make that change. It just drifted.
Okay. So how do we get a handle on these different roles or relationships?
Well, Houghton found it really useful to think about these different ways we behave, these different postures, by using analogies to human relationships. And through exploring that, four particular modalities emerged as really helpful frames.
Four ways of relating to AI.
Four mental models, yeah.
Yeah.
Toolkit, assistant, colleague, and oracle.
Toolkit, assistant, colleague, oracle.
And it's super important to stress, these aren't rigid technical boxes. Mm. They're not mutually exclusive categories for the AI model itself.
Okay.
They're more like modes of interaction, mental models that shape how you, the user, behave.
Oh, yeah.
And they apply way beyond just chatbots.
Got it. So different ways we relate to the system triggered by how it seems to function or how it's presented.
Precisely. They're behavioral modalities. A single AI model could even be set up or presented in ways that make you treat it differently in different situations, evoking different modalities.
All right, let's dive into the first one then. Yeah. AI as a toolkit. The Storrs calls this one maybe the most straightforward, maybe the one we're most used to historically.
I think so, yeah. In this mode, you're basically using the AI system purely as a component, like a specific instrument inside your workflow.
Okay, so I'm in charge.
Completely. You define the outcome you want. You initiate the specific task for the AI. And crucially, you are ultimately responsible for whatever comes out at the end.
So very intentional use. I'm not outsourcing my judgment. I'm using the AI to, like, extend my own capabilities for a specific task.
Yes, that's the core idea. Augmenting, not replacing, your judgment or decision making.
Makes sense.
And a big characteristic of toolkit mode, according to the Storrs, is that the boundaries are usually really clear. You know what it does, you know what it doesn't do.
It's designed for something specific, measurable, contained.
Exactly. Its success is often pretty objective, quantifiable within that workflow.
Like a grammar checker. We use those all the time. It helps polish, but I wrote it, I decided what to accept. I'm responsible for the final piece.
Perfect example. Or think about, say, a system flagging suspicious credit card transactions based on rules.
Right. It flags them, but a human looks at the flag and decides if it's real fraud. The AI is a filter.
Exactly. The Storrs gives some good healthcare examples, too. A toolkit AI might flag patient records that are incomplete for admin staff to fix.
Okay, pointing out a problem.
Or it might identify patients who are statistically at high risk for readmission, so clinicians know who might need extra attention.
But it doesn't decide how to intervene.
No. Or it could suggest billing codes based on doctor's notes, but a human coder has to review and approve them. It's not making the diagnosis, not deciding treatment, not handling the billing itself. It's a utility, a pointer, a filter, an accelerator.
Within a process managed by humans.
Right. There's clarity around its narrow, specific, measurable job.
And because it's so specific, you can actually measure if it's working. Right. Did it catch more incomplete records? Did it save time on billing? Did it help target the right patients for follow-up?
Exactly. Concrete metrics tied to the workflow improvement.
And this clarity, the source argues, makes accountability and trust much simpler, lower risk.
Much easier to reason about. Mm. Clear inputs, expected outputs. If the model starts performing badly on its specific task model drift, maybe,
yeah,
you've handled it like any other tool. Update it, retrain it, try a different tool. Maybe just stop using it if it's not working anymore.
The oversight is clear. Responsibility isn't ambiguous. It's yours, the operator using the tool.
Absolutely. Which contrasts pretty sharply, as the source notes, with the fuzziness that can creep in with the other modes, like assistant or colleague.
Where the AI acts more on its own, maybe less transparently.
Exactly. If an assistant gives you a summary and it's wrong, was it the AI's fault? Mm. Or did you misunderstand it or just not check it properly? It gets much harder to pick apart who's responsible for what.
So toolkit mode avoids that deliberately by staying narrow and precise. The human stays firmly in charge of judgment.
Right. Houghton calls it much more like an instrument extending human capability than impersonating intelligence. Mm. It gives you a function without interpreting for you or asking you to delegate judgment.
And that makes it, what, a safer default for putting AI into practice, especially in sensitive areas.
Kind of a Low friction, low stakes, safe default, yeah. For operational AI in regulated industries or critical workflows, it doesn't aim to replace human judgment. It fits into workflows we already understand. Its performance can be benchmarked.
And regulators probably find that easier to deal with.
Much easier to govern, the source suggests. Its role, its impact, its limits, they're all well-defined and contained within a human-controlled process. The risk profile is manageable.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Powerful tool, but you're clearly the one wielding it. So let's move to number two, AI as an assistant. This feels very familiar
Oh
now.
yeah, this is probably the mode most people bump into most often day to day, especially recently.
Like autocomplete, finishing my sentences in emails or texts, suggesting quick replies.
Exactly. Drafting summaries of articles, meetings, those are classic assistant examples in chat or text. But importantly, assistant mode goes way beyond just conversation.
Okay, like what?
Think about your map app suggesting the best route based on traffic.
Ah, right. It's assisting navigation, offering suggestions. I can still ignore it.
Or systems monitoring factory machines, suggesting, hey, maybe check this part soon based on the sensor data before it breaks. Predictive maintenance assistant.
Gotcha. And in the medical world.
An assistant AI could be monitoring patient vitals. If something looks off, it might suggest an action to the nurse or doctor, like consider giving this med or alert the doc about this symptom pattern.
So it's observing and offering a suggestion, a completion, a nudge, more autonomous than a toolkit.
Right. You didn't define a super specific task. It's acting more proactively based on its analysis.
The main benefit here seems to be efficiency, saving time, freeing up our attention.
That's the core value prop, yeah. Boosting productivity, handling routine stuff, gathering info.
And the source notes something interesting about accuracy here. Unlike a toolkit that needs to be precise for its job.
Right. An assistant doesn't have to be flawless. It just needs to be fast, helpful, and mostly right, on balance, to be valuable.
Mostly right.
Which means we develop a different kind of trust for it, don't we? It's not the trust you put in an expert you consult or a colleague you really rely on. It's more situational, forgiving.
Situational and forgiving, like you expect it might get things wrong sometimes.
Houghton uses this great analogy. He compares it to trusting an intern.
Ah, okay.
You're kind of okay with occasional mistakes or suggestions that are a bit off if overall the intern is genuinely helping you get more done faster.
Right. You accept the occasional typo because they're handling a bunch of other stuff well. You cut them some slack. The net gain is positive.
Exactly. But here, according to the source, is where the real risk of assistant mode kicks in. And it's less about the AI's absolute accuracy.
And more about us, how we react.
Precisely. How the user behaves in response to this generally helpful, mostly right system. This is where that unnoticed slide and misplaced trust really come into play.
Our posture shifts again, but maybe more subtly and dangerously here.
Yeah. Because the source stresses that the context changes everything. Well, that same assistant AI might summarize an earnings call for you. Low stakes, probably easy to spot a major error.
Okay.
Then, next minute, you ask it to help draft parts of a legal document. Stakes just went way up.
Definitely.
Or maybe it's assisting with decisions in a critical medical situation, potentially life-altering stakes.
But the AI doesn't necessarily change its tone, does it? It still sounds like that helpful, slightly fallible intern.
Exactly. Its presentation might be exactly the same, but the consequences of an error just skyrocketed.
And the danger isn't that the assistant suddenly performs worse in the high-stakes case.
Not necessarily.
It's that our behavior changes because it's been generally useful elsewhere.
Right. Because it usually saves you time and cognitive load, you might start to just skim its suggestions. They look plausible enough.
You assume it's probably right instead of rigorously checking, especially if you're busy.
Your standards for verification might subtly drop in practice because overall it feels helpful. It's providing value.
So the scrutiny fades, not because you decided to scrutinize less, but because the system seems competent from all those other interactions.
That trust isn't being carefully calibrated for this specific high-stakes task. It's just
Absorb.
absorbed, carried over from all the times that helped you with low-stakes stuff.
That's the risk Houghton flags. In law, finance, medicine, places where even small mistakes matter. A misplaced decimal, a slightly off summary, a missed alert, a hallucinated fact.
These can have huge downstream consequences. And because the system feels like a helpful assistant, that critical check, that necessary human scrutiny, can fade away before the real risk is obvious.
You've accidentally trained yourself to overtrust it.
Right. You trust it for the small things, and that trust bleeds inappropriately into the big things.
Which makes the design of assistant AI incredibly important. It's not just about accuracy percentage.
Not at all. You have to design it so it doesn't unintentionally nudge people into lowering their guard when they really shouldn't.
So the design has to account for the human response, how it shapes our behavior in that specific context.
Exactly. The assistant mode expands that circle of trust much more, maybe exponentially more, than a toolkit. You rely on it more broadly. And if that reliance leads to less vigilance when vigilance is critical, the design itself has introduced a serious behaviorally driven risk.
Wow. Okay, so toolkit, controlled instrument, assistant, helpful intern, risk of fading scrutiny. What about the third one? AI as a colleague. That sounds even deeper. Partnership.
It is. It implies a different level of interaction. You're not just using a utility or getting passive suggestions. You're actively co-creating, collaborating with it.
Engaging with it, the source says.
Yes, you might pose the problem, set the goal, but the AI contributes meaningfully. It offers a perspective, explores possibilities, helps shape the work's direction.
So less like operating a tool, less like supervising an intern, more like brainstorming with someone, getting a second opinion from a peer.
That's a really good way to think about it. When it works well, it can feel like collaborating with a peer or even a friend, a dynamic back and forth, both sides contributing ideas.
It's not just about the final output from the AI.
No, it's about the process, the iteration, the exchange.
What are some examples from the source?
Okay, Houghton mentions an AI analyzing complex financial documents, maybe looking for patterns, and then not just summarizing, but actually proposing an investment strategy based on what it found.
Okay, that's more than just summarizing.
Or an AI used by a graphic designer. Maybe it generates several different website layout options based on some initial ideas, and the designer then picks one, refines it, builds on it. It's contributing creative options.
And in medicine again, how would that look?
Maybe a diagnostic AI working with a radiologist. So instead of just flagging something suspicious, toolkit, or suggesting a single diagnosis assistant, it might show the image and say something like,
What like?
okay. Based on these findings, I'm also considering interpretation B because I see feature X over here. Have you thought about that? Or maybe, here are three possible diagnoses, here's my confidence for each, and here are the specific image features supporting each one.
Ah, so it's more like a consultation, offering alternatives, justifications.
Exactly. The interaction becomes a dynamic discussion. The AI offers alternative views, highlights things, contributes to the human expert's thinking process. It's collaboration, leveraging the AI as a co-thinker.
So you, the human, still hold the final judgment.
Absolutely. Final responsibility.
But the relationship feels much more peer-like.
Right. And this is where measuring the AI's value gets even fuzzier than with an assistant.
How do you quantify the value of brainstorming?
Exactly. Was that investment strategy truly novel or just lucky? Did the AI genuinely expand your thinking, or was it just confidently hallucinating something that sounded plausible?
The metrics get softer. The value might be in sparking ideas, challenging assumptions, not just hitting a clear target.
Right. And this complexity, this collaborative nature, is why explainability becomes absolutely critical in colleague mode. It's not just a nice to have anymore.
It's essential for the collaboration to even work.
Absolutely. If you're collaborating with a human peer, you expect them to explain their reasoning, right? Show their work, maybe admit when they're not sure.
Yeah, of course.
So, if an AI is supposed to be a colleague, you need to know why it suggested that strategy. What data did it focus on? What assumptions did it make? Why highlight that spot on the scan? Why suggest that legal clause?
Without that insight, the collaboration is totally one-sided, fragile. You can't really trust its contribution.
And worse, the source warns, without explainability, the AI's fluency, how confidently it presents its ideas, can easily be mistaken for real authority. Its confidence looks like clarity.
And that's when you might start to unconsciously give up some control, let its perspective carry too much weight.
Exactly, which is part of collaboration, listening to your peer, but it has to be an intentional, informed choice to weigh their input heavily, not just an accident result of the AI sounding smart and you not being able to see its reasoning.
So the colleague metaphor really only works if the AI acts like a good peer.
Yes. Shows reasoning, is open to challenge, maybe even admits uncertainty, allows you to interrogate its perspective without that transparency.
Modality shifts. It stops being a colleague.
And potentially become something else. Which leads us to the fourth and final modality, maybe the trickiest one, AI as an oracle.
Oracle. That sounds definitive.
It is. This mode is distinct. An oracle in this sense doesn't just assist, it declares. It doesn't collaborate, it concludes.
It just tells you the answer.
Pretty much. It presents information, a diagnosis, a summary, a prediction, a score. The answer with such confidence.
How? Through the language it uses.
Yeah, through fluent prose, or maybe a precise number, a compelling chart. It presents it in a way that makes you feel you don't need to question it. Maybe you don't even feel like you can question it.
The system becomes the authority, the source of truth.
Exactly. The final word. Presented as objective fact. And the source points out this isn't just chatbots giving answers. You can have systems built from, say, toolkit components, but for the end user receiving the output, they function as a black box, an oracle.
Like a credit scoring API,
yeah.
Just spits out a number, or a system that definitively flags fraud, or maybe an algorithm prioritizing patients in an ER.
Perfect examples. As the user, the loan officer, the fraud analyst, the triage nurse, you often have no idea how it works inside.
You didn't build it, can't easily interrogate it, don't know its error rates or why it decided this score for this person.
Right, so why do you trust it? Well, source explains, your trust often comes from outside factors.
Like what?
Because the company selling it says it's validated. Because other people use it. Maybe a regulator approved it. Or sometimes just because the interface looks really slick, professional, authoritative.
The trust isn't based on understanding its process.
No, it's external validation or just the presentation.
And the source actually says this oracle mode can be productive, useful.
It can be, yes. Hugely productive, potentially. It lowers the barrier to using really complex AI. It abstracts away all the technical stuff.
So organizations or people can get the benefits of cutting-edge AI without needing to be AI experts themselves.
Exactly. Houghton suggests this is often how AI scales effectively. Experts build really good, validated systems, and then others can just use them to get definitive answers for specific problems.
Okay. But the stakes seem incredibly high here.
They are. The perceived modality is key. Even if it's built from a precise, validated toolkit, if the user treats it as an unquestionable oracle,
then they might turn off their own critical thinking.
That's the risk. This mode offers potentially the most valued definitive answers, automation, but it carries the highest stakes because you're encouraged to trust it deeply, but your understanding of it might be paper thin.
You're risking more because it feels authoritative, but you can't really see why or where it might fail.
And it's interesting. Industries like healthcare, law, finance, they're already heavily regulated precisely because they know the dangers of misplaced trust, even without AI.
Right. They have checks and balances, peer review, second opinions built in.
Exactly. They understand relying on a single authoritative source without scrutiny is risky.
So the source isn't saying get rid of oracles.
No, not at all. In fact, Houghton thinks a lot of future value and scale for AI will come from this mode. But only if it's done right.
Meaning, how it's designed and presented.
Precisely. A good oracle system doesn't just project confidence, it earns trust through appropriate transparency.
What does that look like?
Maybe it reveals its uncertainty, shows the sources it used, gives a confidence score, indicates when a case is unusual or outside its normal operating range.
So it gives you context for its answer.
Yes. And critically, especially in high-stakes areas, it invites a second opinion. It provides clear ways for humans to override or review the decision.
So friction making you pause, making you check, isn't always bad design in this mode.
It can be a crucial feature, a necessary guardrail. A moment that prompts you to verify or get another look, especially when it really matters.
Because the absolute core danger here,
the thing that must never happen by accident,
is that shift from healthy skepticism to just submission, blind faith.
Exactly. Once the system becomes an unquestionable oracle in the user's mind, they stop reasoning around its output, using it as input for their own judgment, and start reasoning from its output, treating it as gospel truth.
That shift from critical thinking to passive acceptance, just because the AI sounded sure of itself, that's where the biggest danger lies.
Yeah.
Especially in critical fields.
And that really ties all these modalities together, doesn't it? Toolkit, assistant, colleague, oracle. That foundational idea holds. How we frame the AI, how we perceive its role, that profoundly shapes how we use it and act around it.
They're not just labels. They're cognitive models dictating our interaction. Influencing scrutiny, trust, how we react to errors.
Right, and the stakes involved absolutely change the rules. Which modality is okay? How must it be designed?
Like the source says, a bad movie recommendation from an assistant. Annoying date night. Low stakes. Errors are tolerable.
Yeah.
But an oracle-like system guiding medical treatment without safeguards, That could lead to misdiagnosis, lawsuits, real harm. The acceptable modality has to shift dramatically with the stakes.
You can tolerate mistakes from an intern drafting an email. You absolutely cannot tolerate them from a system guiding critical care if you're treating its output as infallible truth.
And Houghton really emphasizes the clinical setting here. High stakes, trust, accountability. It's a crucible for these dynamics.
It really is. Even subtle design choices, how information is presented, can nudge busy clinicians towards over-reliance sometimes.
Or maybe towards ignoring the AI completely if it feels too uncertain or unhelpful.
Exactly. Complete disengagement is also a risk if the role is unclear or the interaction clumsy.
So whether you present that clinical AI as a precise toolkit, a helpful assistant, a collaborative colleague, or a definitive oracle, that's not just semantics.
No, it's fundamental. It shapes how doctors interpret the output, who feels responsible if something goes wrong, how much they check its work, and ultimately, it impacts patient care and safety.
An AI that sounds like a confident expert, an oracle, might lead a busy doctor to just accept its diagnosis too quickly.
That's the concern the source raises, especially under pressure. Conversely, if the same AI capability is presented as just a tentative assistant needing lots of validation, the doctor might ignore potentially valuable insights if it feels too cumbersome.
So every little design choice matters in these high-stakes areas. Confidence level displayed, timing of input, how it explains itself, chat, chart, number.
All of it feeds into the user's mental model. Affects responsibility, efficiency, safety, oversight.
Which leads back to that crucial question Houghton asks. When designing or deploying AI, pause and ask.
What role does this thing actually play in the end user's mind in this specific situation? Not just what did we build, but how will it be perceived and used?
Because if the perceived role doesn't match the stakes, if a toolkit feels like an oracle or an assistant is treated like an expert,
small assumptions about its role can scale up into huge structural risks in the workflow.
And the lines get blurry in the real world. It's not always neat categories.
Definitely not. A system might be built one way, technically. Maybe lots of toolkits and assistants linked together, but the user experiences it as something else entirely, like a single oracle giving a score.
Or a user pushes an assistant into a colleague role, asking it for strategic advice it wasn't built for.
Or treats it like an oracle, demanding definitive facts it might just hallucinate confidently. And these shifts happen in the user's mind, through interaction, across contexts. Not just in the code.
Which just hammers home the need for really intentional design and deployment, thinking beyond just the tech specs.
It's not just good product design anymore. It's fundamental to ethical AI, responsible AI, especially as it moves into more critical parts of our lives.
The source sums up those trade-offs nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah. Toolkit gives user control, clear accountability for a narrow task. Assistant helps with load, but needs care around shaping scrutiny. Colleague enables collaboration, but needs explainability to work. Oracle offers simplicity and scale, but less transparency, demanding safeguards against blind trust.
And none are inherently right or wrong. They all have potential value.
Absolutely. But each one needs to be designed, deployed, maybe even regulated differently, with a really deep understanding of how it will actually be used, how it will be perceived, and what the real-world consequences are.
It requires everyone, designers, deployers, even us as users, to be much more conscious of the relationship we're forming with the AI.
Exactly.
This whole framework toolkit, assistant, colleague, oracle, it really drives home how much framing matters. How we perceive these systems changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you, the listener, a way to think more critically about the AI you use every day.
Mm-hmm.
Is this chatbot acting like an assistant or an oracle right now? Is my level of trust appropriate for what it's doing and what's at stake?
It empowers you to maybe push back, ask for more clarity, question if that system presented as an oracle has really earned that authority for this specific use.
Or notice if your helpful assistant is making you lower your guard when you really need to stay sharp.
Mm-hmm.
You can start demanding the right level of transparency and accountability based on the role you see it playing and the potential fallout if it's wrong.
Which leads us to maybe a final thought, a provocative question to leave you with.
Okay.
If this framework is right, if the biggest risk isn't just the AI tech itself, but how we behave around it, how we trust, scrutinize, integrate it, and if that behavior is so heavily shaped by the mental model we apply, tool, assistant, colleague, oracle,
right,
then how do we all get better at consciously recognizing and managing those mental models? How do we make sure our level of skepticism, our diligence, our willingness to question actually matches the real stakes of whatever we're using the AI for.
That's a really important question.
Yeah.
How do we calibrate our own response?
Something to think about the next time you ask an AI for help, or for its perspective, or for what feels like a definitive answer.